What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 377 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. As always, you can listen to the program on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, and you can follow along on Facebook and X for the latest updates. Good to be back with you folks this week. Maybe a little shorter of an episode today, not a whole lot to get to outside of the big three teams that were talking about today, but I think still plenty of stuff to get to, plenty of Patriots off-season stuff. There's a lot of coaching stuff to go through. Patriots obviously announced the new coordinators last week. Unfortunately, happened the hours after we stopped recording. So of course that's how it goes. But we'll break down those coaching things today. And yeah, we'll get to the Celtics and the Bruins. Some interesting weeks for the two of those teams. And yeah, then we'll do a music theme to top five at the end of today's episode, with the Grammys taking place this weekend. So that will be interesting for sure. But before I get going, would like to say thanks to Alex Campbell. Came on guest Friday last week. A really great episode talking NFL playoffs, and then actually we briefly talked about our thoughts about Josh McDaniels being hired as the new offensive coordinator for the Patriots. Obviously, get into more of those thoughts today. But great episode. Go listen to it if you have not already. So I think we're going to start with Patriots today. Start with some coaching news. There's actually coaching news that came in just this morning. We'll get to that shortly. But I think more importantly, I think I'd like to get to more thoughts about Josh McDaniels. Obviously the news came out last week that he had been hired as the, new offensive coordinator. New kind of being a, not exactly new, with him. All right, we're back. Had to stop the recording. I think that I just experienced a small little earthquake here in Sudbury, so stop the recording briefly. Everything appears to be okay, but kind of just stopped suddenly. But I think getting back to Josh McDaniels talking about being kind of a, quote unquote new hire. I mean, a guy that's been here for two separate tours of duty as the offensive coordinator, obviously once with Tom Brady for years, and then the years, the end of Brady's career, and then Cam Newton, and then Mac Jones, and then obviously going to the Raiders a couple of years ago. So obviously he's back. I think there are kind of a couple different ways that I've looked at this. I think the first way, and kind of talked about this, that I think part of me would have liked to see a coordinator that's, new to the organization and somebody different, running maybe a different type of offense, and that's at least the way that I looked at it. But I also think that he's a guy that's an experienced offensive coordinator, has worked with young quarterbacks before, or, worked with Mac Jones here. And, Mac, I think, had his best year of his career, his rookie year. So I think there's a reason to kind of be excited. And, Josh is a guy that knows what it's like to coach here, and understands what the, expectations are and that sort of thing. And I think hard to know if like they're going to run the exact Tom Brady offense that they ran, for so many years. Probably not. I think that probably the idea is to run an offense, centered around Drake May and, his abilities and the things that he does well. And so I think in that respect, I think it's a good hire that they're going to gear the offense toward doing what they can to, highlight Drake's skills. And, also, as I said, he's just an experienced offensive coordinator, has called plays. He's been doing that mostly his whole career. And, I think it just gives you more confidence in the Patriots offense than, Van Pelt last year, who had never called plays before, had been an offensive coordinator, but, never called plays. And so I think here's McDaniels, a guy that's probably one of the, if not like the most experienced offensive coordinator that they could get. So, I think maybe it's not the most like imaginative thing, but it's like you at least get a guy who's experienced and has coached here before. And I think that's kind of the two things that I think are most important here. People can have their own opinions about, oh, they should have gone outside the organization and that. And, I think that that's fair. I kind of had that same thought as well. But I think this is not a hire where you're like, oh my God, what are they doing? It's kind of like the safe choice, which is fine. Like, I think they're a team that just, what you saw last year, there just were so many shortcomings when it came to coaching that it's just like, you just need guys with experience. And I think really, if you just do that, this team is just going to, naturally just improve from last year, just given the experience on the coaching staff was just kind of the way it seems to be going. So, Patriots also brought in Terrell Williams to run the defense as a coordinator. He's coached in the NFL in the college ranks for years, has coached in the NFL since 2012, mostly as a defensive line coach. Was with the Lions this past year as a defensive line and run game coordinator. So, I think, schematically, I'm not sure what the like differences are going to be in terms of him and DeMarcus Covington, but I will tell you, I think given his experience with like a run game coordinator, it tells me that the Patriots want to become a team that's better at stopping the run. And Patriots had their issues this season stopping the run, and I think that they're going to make that a priority. And I also think like the way that Mike Vrabel, runs his teams, he wants his teams to be strong in the trenches. And I think hiring a guy that's a defensive line coach, it kind of makes that a priority. And I also think that, Williams had also coached in Tennessee with Mike Vrabel, so they're familiar with each other. So, I think it's a great hire. I think it's, obviously, defensive coordinator is not going to be as flashy as offensive coordinator, but I think for this team trying to work its way back to being a sound, dominant kind of defensive line, where kind of you draw strength from the defensive line, it's great that they could make that higher. I think that that's, for me, that's the most important part of the defense. Sure, that the secondary and the linebackers are key, but as you saw this past year, you don't have an offensive line that can pressure the quarterback, and the Patriots were bottom of the league in sacks this year, and that was including a game in which they had 9 sacks. Just wasn't good enough, and the run defense wasn't good enough either. And so I think being able to, prioritize that is huge. So, it appears that the Patriots are set with their coordinators. They are also bringing back Jeremy Springer as special teams coordinator. Patriots special teams, I think, have shown some decent improvement this year. So he is back. So that's the other coordinator that will be back. Patriots also have made some other additions to the coaching staff. It's a tweet that I pulled up from Mike Reese, and this was also being reported by two others, that the Patriots have hired Doug Marrone to be their, I believe, to be their offensive line coach. Names may sound familiar. He had coached, was a head coach twice in the NFL, most recently for the Jags for 4 years from 2017 to 2020, then had coached 2 years in Buffalo as well, 2013 and 2014. So Patriots bringing in an experienced coach to coach the offensive line. I think he has had plenty of experience coaching the offensive line when he wasn't a head coach with a number of different teams. So I think again, it's a good hire. Makes a lot of sense for the Patriots to, prioritize experience on the coaching staff and, prioritize the offensive line, which I think to me is kind of the most important position group for this particular team. So I think it's great news that the Patriots are, taking that seriously and yeah, I think as they continue to, kind of overhaul the coaching staff, it'll be interesting to see what other position coaches they choose to bring in, wide receivers, running backs, positions all over the place. So I think that's probably it for the coaching. The NFL came out with finalists for several end of season awards, including MVP, offensive rookie, coach of the year, and things like that. Christian Gonzalez is a finalist for the AP comeback player of the year, obviously. Only played in four games last year, but was tremendous this season. So he is up as a finalist for the award. The other guys that are up for it in the NFL are Joe Burrow, Sam Darnold, J.K. Dobbins, and DeMar Hamlin. So good luck to Gonzalez with the NFL honors that take place the night before the Super Bowl. So definitely something to keep in mind. So I think that that's going to do it for the Patriots. We're going to move on here and talk some Celtics. A good way for the Celtics to end up. A good way for the Celtics to end their West Coast trip with a win over the Mavericks on Saturday evening, finishing a 3-1 road trip. So we were last with you after the Celtics had dominated the Warriors in the first game of the trip, winning by 40 points and just playing outstanding offensive basketball. Celtics then traveled to LA, the back-to-back against the Clippers and the Lakers. Kind of uneven. I think in both of those games, Celtics just did not have it against the Lakers on the second of the back-to-back. Really had no chance in this game. Shot poorly. The Lakers were ready, and the Celtics just didn't have it. And this was the second of a back-to-back. They won in overtime against the Clippers the night previously. Didn't think that they played particularly well in this game either. So, I think it was good to get the win, obviously. There are positive things. You saw some end of the bench guys get some chances. Jaden Springer, in particular, made a couple big threes late in that game, ended up being huge. So, positives there to see him get some playing time and, knock down some shots. But that was a very shorthanded Clippers team that the Celtics should have been able to handle. And, instead, Derrick Jones and Kevin Porter Jr. had monster games, and the Celtics were really kind of unable to put them away for most of the night, and kind of struggled through the last couple of minutes of regulation, and then finally did enough in overtime to beat the Clippers. So, I think at this point in the season, as kind of we've talked about for weeks, it's the dog days of the season and kind of hard to find motivation. And, I think a win's a win, but I think that's a game that you would have liked the Celtics to, impose their will a little bit better. And I think that, this has always been a team, regardless of what year, I think that they've always been a team that struggles sometimes when, the star players were not playing for another team. James Harden wasn't playing, Kawhi Leonard, although Kawhi Leonard's kind of a special case because he's only played a handful of games this year, so it's not, unique to this particular game. But I think Harden wasn't in, Norman Powell wasn't playing. You just had a bunch of guys that, to their credit, played really well in kind of an expanded role, which is, obviously good for them. But I think for the Celtics, you would have liked a little bit more urgency in this game. And, they found a way to win. And the most important thing is that good teams find ways to win. I don't want to downplay it because I think it is awesome that you saw Jaden Springer come in and knock down some big shots when he was called upon. I think really great to see the Celtics coaching staff be able to, have confidence in some end of the bench guys at key moments. I think you've seen, Walsh play some minutes at key times at certain points this season, fourth quarter minutes. Springer, obviously, Kata as well. I think on nights where Porzingis and Horford aren't available, which they weren't available in this particular game. So, it's opportunities for guys like that to step up. And I think it's, I always talk about that, like, with this Celtics team being in the position that they are financially, that they really don't have a lot of wiggle room to, they have constraints financially that, they kind of have to make it work with some of the end of the bench guys, the guys that they find in the second round of the draft, and guys that, don't cost a lot of money, that like they can be impact players and be important players. And I think that's why you want to hope that, the Celtics continue to develop Walsh and Springer and, Kata, JD Davison, and Baylor Shireman, that, okay, down the road they can rely on these guys to play some, somewhat major minutes when they have, all this money locked up with the two Jays, Derek White, Jrue Holiday, Porzingis, depending on how much longer they're going to be here. But I think it's just important to be able to, see those guys get opportunities and flourish with those opportunities. And, that was really good to see against the Clippers. Would have liked to see them play better, but you know what? They got the win, and I think that's what's important. It wasn't great that they couldn't build off of it in LA with everybody healthy when they played the Lakers the next night. But, I think Saturday was a really good way to build off, or not build off, rebound. Saturday's game was a good way to rebound for this team. Kind of having some trouble in the first quarter. Dallas took a sizable early lead, but then the Celtics, I think, started to find their rhythm offensively. It was great to see Derek White seemingly get back into a rhythm offensively to get 23 points in this game, Tatum at 24. But I think the Celtics did a really good job in this game of kind of balancing everything around, or like the offense was balanced in this game, that you had all five starters score at least 15 points. You got good shooting off the bench from Pritchard and from Hauser. Cornette gave you 10 rebounds and five assists. It really felt like it was a complete team effort following that first quarter in which they were outscored 29-25. But, I think shot a little bit better, close to what you'd expect from the three-point shooting, about 39%, made 23s. Holiday and White were 9 of 20 shooting threes, which pretty good. And I think, you saw everybody be able to chip in. Porzingis at 18, Jaylen Brown at 22. Didn't make a three-pointer, but was 10 of 16 from inside the arc. So I think there are definitely positives to take from this, that, everybody kind of played their role and was able to be effective in different parts of different areas of their game. So I think just a really solid rebound effort in this game. And I think it obviously helps when you're playing the team that you played in the finals last year. Obviously, the Mavericks were a little bit different with Luka not playing, and Klay Thompson making an appearance, only at 6 points in this game. But, I think a really solid second and third quarters for the Celtics, outscoring the Mavericks 71 to 47. So really took control in those middle quarters. And I think it was good to see the Celtics kind of put together a good, solid offensive game that I think you would expect from a team most nights. You know, shooting 43% or whatever it was, it's not perfect, but I think, you know, they were in control offensively, really able to kind of get into what they want to do, which I think was good to see. It does seem like they've kind of had a hard time, you know, getting into rhythms offensively in certain games. You know, I think the Clippers game was definitely a game that was tough, and the Lakers game, of course. But I think when you look at, you know, how they played against Golden State, how they played against Dallas, you know, that's kind of more of what you expect from this team night in and night out, I think, from an offensive perspective. And I think, you know, defensively, again, it kind of starts with setting the tone physically and setting the tone with your intensity. And I know that it's, you know, challenging. We're not quite to the trade deadline or the All-Star break, but, you know, I think for this team to kind of get where they need to be, it's, you know, having confidence that, okay, the shots will start falling a little bit more regularly. You know, Porzingis has started to be regularly back into the lineup. You know, and he's started to, you know, hopefully get back into rhythm. You know, I think Holiday and Derek White in particular haven't had the best season in terms of shooting and what they've done offensively, but I think hopefully Saturday's game gives you an idea that maybe they're on the right track. So I think Celtics this week, pretty busy. They have four games this week with two home games against Houston tonight and then Chicago on Wednesday. And then they start a three-game road trip with two games in New Orleans Friday night and then Philadelphia on Sunday. And then following that, the Celtics have five games until the All-Star break. So my math is correct. That is nine games that the Celtics have before the All-Star break, which is Valentine's Day weekend. So curious about Celtics' response tonight, you know, how they respond to the Dallas win against the Houston team that's playing some really good basketball right now. They recently beat the Cavaliers twice in the last couple of weeks, and you know, Ime Udoka always has that team playing hard. So I think this is definitely a good matchup for the Celtics, and a good opportunity for them to maybe show that they've learned a little bit since the last time that they came home from a road trip. You know, obviously that was the disappointing loss to the Kings. So I think this will be a good opportunity for the Celtics to be able to kind of match a team's intensity and match a team that's been playing really, really good basketball lately. So looking forward to that game tonight. And then obviously got Chicago, New Orleans, and Philadelphia the rest of the week. So I think that's gonna do it for the Celtics. Gonna move on and talk some Bruins. A pretty successful week for the Bruins, as well as the Celtics. So I think some solid things to talk about with the Bruins. You know, obviously things are very tight in the playoff chase, and kind of I think all points are at a premium at this point. But I think, you know, obviously last week, a solid win against the Sharks, in which they had a third period comeback. Did not play great Wednesday night in New Jersey, though, following that against the Devils team that I think needed that game more than the Bruins. I know that that sounds crazy because the Bruins are a team that's, you know, locked into the playoff chase, but I think the Devils hadn't been playing well as of late. Got kind of a kick in the rear from their coach the morning before the game, and you know, really outplayed the Bruins and took it to the Bruins special teams with three power play goals. So, you know, obviously that was a pretty ugly game. You know, New Jersey's a team that's, I think, one of the best teams in the East. Very talented, very deep, And the Bruins just couldn't seem to get out of their own way. You know, got the first goal in that game, but then kind of just started to slip away. Jeremy Swayman got replaced, I think, after the second period, left with an injury, I believe, but then did return Saturday against Colorado. So the Bruins, I think, did do a good job of bouncing back after that loss to the Devils with back-to-back wins. At the Garden, you know, they were able to win a second of a back-to-back against the Senators. First time that they could beat Ottawa this season with a 2-0 win. And then the Bruins had a really solid, again, a really good third period against Colorado with a win on Saturday afternoon. So I think, you know, with this team, you always want to hope that, like, there are certain games that kind of give them a springboard. You haven't really, you know, quite seen that yet, but I do think that, you know, this is a team that's, you know, since that loss to Tampa Bay January 9th, is a team that's won 5 out of 7. 5 wins, 1 loss, 1 overtime loss in their last 7 games. So, you know, maybe there's something to be said for the fact that maybe they are turning it around a little bit. You know, Swayman, I think, has been better in some of these games. They've gotten some good goaltending from Korpisalo as well in the last 2 games that he started. And I also think that you've seen the Bruins' offense kind of come back to life. David Pastrnak is, you know, it's, you know, I don't want to downplay the way that he's playing because he's playing great, you know, and he's getting other guys involved, but it's like, this is kind of what you expect from him. You know, I felt like for a majority of this season, you hadn't really seen him get into a rhythm, and I think now you're seeing him, you know, getting into a rhythm with now at this point 59 points in 51 games. You know, it's, we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, you know, that he only has, you know, 13 goals or whatever, and it's on pace to score 27 goals. Well, he's got 24 goals now, so it's like the goals have started to come in bunches for Pastrnak, which I think is great. And I think it's elevating other guys on the team. I think specifically Morgan Geekie, who's been on fire in the last couple of weeks. You know, one of the guys that really, I think, was struggling out of the gate, and you kind of were like, okay, or were the Bruins just, you know, banking on his career year from last year, and there's no way he's going to top it? Well, you know, his statistics are still kind of a ways away from last year, but, you know, I think that they're starting to kick up. You know, he had, I believe he had 17 goals last year, and already has 15 to this point. And I think only going to see, hopefully, only going to see that improve with the way that he and Pastrnak are playing. And, you know, Zacha has been peppering in the points as well, with 29 points in 51 games, is third on the team. So I think, you know, it's good to see that some, you know, scoring has come back. I think with some guys in the lineup that you really need it from, you know, Pastrnak really is kind of the guy that you need to see it from. And it's been good to see him, you know, elevate some other guys with the setups on both goals in the third period on Saturday, as Pastrnak set up Geekie, and the Bruins really were pretty sleepy in that game for the first 2 periods. Then the Bruins were able to get a tying goal just 25 seconds into the third, and then getting the go-ahead goal later in the game, and then Pastrnak finished it with an empty net. So I think, you know, you're really starting to see him pick it up. You know, the guys that are your leaders, he's picking it up. You know, Swayman's playing well, and Korpisalo, you know, I don't know if I would quantify him as a team leader, but, you know, he was excellent Thursday night against Ottawa. Played one of the best games that I've seen him play against his old team. And it's, you know, so interesting that the reaction when the Bruins traded for him was, okay, here's this reclamation project guy that we don't really expect much from. And, you know, he's turned in some really good performances this season, and I think is one of the reasons why the Bruins have started to respond a little bit more and play a little bit better and cleaner. Obviously the special teams are still issues for the team. I think the scoring is still an issue, but I'm really glad that the Bruins have, brought Matt Patra back into the mix. He's helping the Bruins kind of become more of a dynamic offensive team. I think that, the Bruins still, I think, would benefit greatly from, McAvoy and Lindholm returning soon. I think that would really help them from the back end standpoint, because they're guys that the Bruins are playing a lot that I don't think you would have expected. Michael Callahan, who the Bruins called up from Providence a couple weeks ago, has played in a couple of regular season games. He's a guy that, played all 4 years at Providence College and then had been with the P Bruins in the last couple of years. And honestly, I didn't expect that you would see him play in any games this season. But, obviously with the injuries to McAvoy and Lindholm, the Bruins have gone to, Parker Wotherspoon has played a lot of games. Jordan Oesterle has played a decent amount, and now Callahan that's played in a few games, and I think Callahan's been pretty solid. And I think that gives you some positive feeling that, okay, you could go to this guy if you need to at a certain point. He's been playing with Brandon Carlo. You've seen, Peak take on a larger role, and I really like what I've seen from him this season. Zadorov has a lot of bumps and bruises for sure. But I think it'd be great to see the Bruins get back to health a little bit more as they, really are in the thick of it in the playoff chase, with seemingly every single game, mattering quite a bit. So I think you hope that, other guys can start to pick it up in the scoring department. Elias Lindholm really has not had a good offensive season. I think he's done a lot of little things well, which has kind of always been the strong point of his game. But I think the Bruins would like to see, more production. And I think, Pastrnak and Geeky have been great. That particular line's been great. But for this team to really, I think, for you to really feel good about their postseason prospects, they need some other guys to start, making a difference offensively. I think you'd like to see a Trent Frederick give you a little bit more offensively, but it just hasn't come together for him this season for whatever reason. And, frankly, maybe this is an unpopular opinion, but I do kind of think the Bruins need to trade him. I just don't know if it's going to work going forward, especially if he's a guy that, wants 5 million. It's just the production's not matching. It just production's not where it needs to be at the end of the day. And I just think, like, it's disappointing, but it's kind of just like you look at the last 2 years that he had with the solid offensive seasons, and you almost wonder, was it just kind of a aberration kind of thing? Is that just kind of career year for him? Is that really the type of player that he is? And obviously he's not playing well now, and I don't want to say that, oh, this is who he is as a player. I think it's like he's not as bad as he's played this year, but he's not nearly as good as the year that he put together, like last year, for example. And I think who he really is as a player is somewhere in between there. But I just think, like, the Bruins are a team that they need offensive production, and it's just not quite consistent enough from him. And I think that's why you could see him get moved. Charlie Coyle, I think you could as well, as he's got one more year left. But I think, like, the Bruins are only doing moves like that if they are, like, totally out of the running. And I think obviously with trade deadline being maybe a month plus away, obviously the Four Nations tournament's coming up. I don't know if the Bruins are really going to be in a position to, sell off the pieces. I think that some people would like to see them do it, but it's just, in my opinion, I don't think the Bruins are going to do that if they're in a playoff spot or if they're, like, entrenched in, a battle. The only time I really think they would sell is if they were, 5, 6 points out of the playoffs by the time the deadline rolled around, which, who knows, a lot can change between now and then. But I think you're not going to likely see the team do any major trades, although they probably should, because I do have a fear that they're not going to trade somebody like Frederick and he's going to walk in free agency and they could have, made a move. But honestly, like the way that he's playing, I don't know what kind of, return you're going to be able to get on, an underperforming guy. So Bruins, like the Celtics, are pretty busy this week with 3 games. They will travel up to Buffalo to play the Sabres tomorrow night, and then they will have a 3-game homestand. They'll host Winnipeg on Thursday and the Rangers on Saturday. That will be a pretty important game for the Bruins, as the Rangers are starting to make a climb back up the Eastern Conference standing. So they're a team that's chasing the Bruins' tail as well, along with like 5 or 6 other teams, as we'll take a look at the standings later. But I think for the Bruins, it's just continuing to have confidence in the good things that you're doing. Getting the good goaltending, getting the timely goal scoring, getting, guys like Pastrnak and Geeky, continuing to see them, flourish offensively, I think is the biggest thing. But I think, try to see if you can get somebody else going, in terms of putting pucks in the net. Because they certainly need that. Like, if they're going to make the playoffs, it can't just be Pastrnak and Geeky. It's got to be somebody else. It's got to be a Lindholm. It's got to be a Coyle. It's got to be, a Patra or Oliver Wahlstrom. Like, it's got to be somebody. They can't just make the playoffs off the strength of one line. Don't think that they're good enough to do that. So, I think, Buffalo should be a good chance for this team to continue to build. Great chance for them to win 3 in a row, and then got some tough games with, Winnipeg as good as they are, and then the Rangers with how well they've been playing, and then the Bruins will wrap up that homestand with the Wild, and then they will finish the final 2 games before the Four Nations tournament against the Rangers again, and then against Vegas. So the Bruins, 6 games until that break for the Four Nations tournament, which is 2 weeks long. So I think we tried to identify that, okay, see how they do in the 10-game segment before the Four Nations, and the Bruins 4 games already 3-1. So I think that that's a good start, but I think you want to continue to see their play, be on the up and up. So I think it's probably going to do it for the Bruins. We're going to move on, talk some NFL. We will have a guest Friday later this week, as you may have noticed with the socials, we're talking about the Red Sox offseason to this point. Not really much to report at the current moment, but we'll update you on everything Red Sox later this week on guest Friday. So looking forward to that. The Revolution have started their preseason. We are under a month until the Revs will start playing regular season games. So very interested to see all the new faces that they have on this year's team. But preseason has gotten underway. I think they played a couple games. Then regular season starts February 22nd against Nashville. So I think we're going to jump to some NFL notes here. Obviously, the conference championships were yesterday. Alex Campbell and I obviously talked at great length about both of these games last week. So the Eagles dominating the Commanders 55 to 23, 3 touchdowns for Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts in this game. So Eagles just totally dominating this one. Commanders not helping themselves with multiple fumbles, but I think the Eagles, for me, I think showing, in my opinion, that they're the best team in football with the way that they play and just dominated. And I think I think clearly Washington a little bit overmatched, but I think the Eagles for me, like, great rushing attack as always, great defensive line as always. They have a really good secondary, but the difference for me is the passing offense and how easily they were able to move the ball on Sunday. Now, obviously, not every team is the Commanders. They're not the best defense, but I think the Eagles, for me, when they're moving the ball with ease through the air, that's what makes them pretty hard to beat. So I really liked what I saw from them yesterday. I think that they played the best game. They played their best game in the playoffs yesterday. So good to see for them. They advanced to the Super Bowl, and then the Chiefs and the Bills, another classic going down to the wire. You know, I think my opinion, Chiefs got helped by some officiating yet again in this game with some bad spots, but the Chiefs, you know, do what they do best, come up with the big plays late. They beat the Bills 32 to 29. So Chiefs and the Eagles would be a rematch of Super Bowl 57, I think. Yeah, I believe Super Bowl 57, because they had met 2 years ago, or was it 3 years ago? No, it was 2 years ago. Yeah, it was 2 years ago. So they'll have a rematch here in New Orleans on February 9th. And the Chiefs are looking to become the first team in the Super Bowl era to win three consecutive Super Bowls. And they are opening up as favorites as well in the Super Bowl, which, I don't know, a little bit of a surprise to me, but it'll be exciting. Huh? Super Bowl, that's for sure. So I think it's probably gonna do it, although probably should get to some different or some coaching hires. Liam Cohen was hired by the Jags this past week. Pete Carroll hired by the Raiders. And then Aaron Glenn hired by the Jets. Oh, I think we covered that last week, so I think oh, and the Cowboys are hiring Brian Schottenheimer to be their head coach. So I think all the head coaching spots have been filled at this point. Or actually, I think except the Saints. I think they do not have a coach yet. But I think, yeah, I think we're going to move on and talk some NBA here. Vince Carter had his number 15 retired by the Nets franchise over the weekend. And we'll take a look at the standings right now in the NBA, thanks to the Cavaliers losing three in a row. The Celtics are now 4.5 games back of first place in the Eastern Conference. The Knicks are 6.5 games back of the Cavs, two back from the Celtics. So maybe outside chance the Celtics can catch the Cavaliers. It is worth noting the Celtics will play Cleveland two more times in the regular season, so opportunity for the Celtics to close that gap even further. So Knicks in third, Bucks in fourth, followed by the Pacers and the Pistons in fifth and sixth, and then in the play-in spots have the Magic, the Heat, the Hawks, and the Bulls, and the Sixers a game back of that final play-in spot. In the Western Conference, Oklahoma City in first, Rockets in second, just point percentage points ahead of Memphis for second. The Rockets will visit the Garden tonight to play the Celtics. So Memphis in third, Denver in fourth, then the Lakers and the Clippers in fifth and sixth, and then in the play-in spots, the Timberwolves, the Suns, Mavericks, and the Kings, with the Warriors just a game back of that final play-in spot. A lot of games on the NBA schedule tonight, as there was just one on the schedule yesterday. So 7 o'clock starts the Lakers and the Hornets. 7 o'clock on NBA TV, the Pistons and the Cavs. And then 7:30 Sacramento and Brooklyn, Orlando and Miami, Memphis and New York, New Orleans and Toronto, and then 8 o'clock, Denver and Chicago, Atlanta and Minnesota, and then at 8:30, Washington and Dallas, 9 o'clock, Milwaukee and Utah, and then at 9:30 on NBA TV, are the Clippers and the Suns. So I think it's going to do it for the NBA. Get to some NHL notes. There was a big move in the NHL this past, I think it was Friday night. There was a huge trade between the Avalanche, the Blackhawks, and the Hurricanes. And so, yeah, so here's the full trade. So, a former Bruin involved in this trade too. So, three-team trade between Carolina, Chicago, and Colorado. So Colorado receiving Martin Natchez and Jack Drury from Carolina. They also got a second round pick and a fourth round pick out of this trade. Carolina getting Mikko Rantanen and Taylor Hall. Taylor Hall coming from Chicago, and then Rantanen coming from Colorado. So pretty big deal for Carolina as they bring in Taylor Hall and Rantanen, who is scheduled to be a free agent this summer. So a pretty big deal for both of those teams. And the Blackhawks, I think, just getting a couple of draft picks, you know, as they're a team that's, you know, still in full rebuild mode. So really good deals, I think, for both Carolina and Colorado, both getting two pretty good impact players. So curious to see how that goes. But that was a huge news Friday night, you know, really kind of a major trade that you don't often see in the NHL these days. So that was kind of interesting to see. It's been reported that Alex Pietrangelo of Canada will skip the Four Nations face-off as he is dealing with an illness. Is that face-off comes, the Four Nations face-off's in a couple weeks. Will Borgen getting a 5-year deal with the Rangers after being was after being acquired a month ago. So I think we'll take a look at the standings here before we take a look at the scores in the Eastern Conference. In the Atlantic, Toronto leads with 62 points, Florida in second with 61, and then Ottawa in third with 56 points. In the Metro, you have Washington at 71, Carolina at 64, and New Jersey at 62. And then in the wild card spots, you have the Bruins with 56 points and Tampa Bay with 55 points, and then followed by Columbus, who also has 55, Montreal at 53, New York with 52, Detroit with 51. So it's pretty close there in the Eastern Conference, but the Bruins currently do hold a playoff spot as the first wild card team. So it's close, very, very close, and I think it continue to likely be that way. In the Western Conference, Winnipeg leads the conference. Bruins will be hosting the Jets later this week. They have 71 points in the Central, followed by Dallas with 63, Minnesota with 62. In the Pacific, Vegas leads the division with 66 points, followed by Edmonton with 65 and LA with 58. In the wild card spots, Colorado has the first wild card spot with 60 points, and then Calgary has that second spot with 55 points, and Vancouver trailing by 3 points for the final spot in the Western Conference. Taking a look at the schedule here in the NHL tonight. At 7 o'clock on the NHL Network, you have the Kings and the Red Wings. Also at 7 o'clock, the Devils and the Flyers. 7:30, Vancouver and St. Louis. 9:30, Seattle and Edmonton. and then 10:30 Pittsburgh and San Jose. So I think take a look at some baseball notes. The Cubs are finalizing a trade for Ryan Pressly, formerly of the Astros, and still a lot being floated around about Alex Bregman. The Astros general manager talked about the possibility of him coming back to the Astros, so that's a possibility. Red Sox are obviously, I think, engaged in that as well. I think that there were reports earlier in the week or last week that the Red Sox were not willing to go more than, I think, 3 or 4 years with Bregman, which it's like, to me, it kind of makes sense. He's 31, he's kind of on the older side, and the Red Sox, I think, are in a position where they want to be able to kind of bring in their young guys as well. He would be a good fit for sure with his, offensive profile and great leadership and still gives you good defense. But I think I just have concerns kind of about the age and where he might fit in. But I think certainly we'll have more thoughts on that on Guest Friday later this week with our returning guests. We'll definitely get to that then. So without further ado, we're going to get to our top five this week with all the sports being exhausted. The Grammys are taking place on Sunday night, so I thought it'd be good to do a music theme top five. So I'm going to do my top five albums. Now, for those of you that know me well, you know that rap and hip hop is kind of my number one genre that I listen to pretty much exclusively. So I figured this would be a good time to do my, top five hip hop albums. I said albums in general, but it's like this is about like 90% of what I listen to anyway. So I figured that I would give you five albums. It was hard enough for me to pick five, so I'm not going to rank them. I know that, that's usually what I do on this program, but I cannot rank these five albums. It's just impossible. Took me long enough to even pick five albums. So, I think we're going to start with Nothing Was the Same, which is a Drake album. That's an album that I think started to listen to my senior year of high school. And just, I would say all these albums that I'm about to list, no skips whatsoever on any of them. So really like that album. That's probably my favorite Drake album. Just great songs left and right on that album for sure. So I would have that in there. It's listed as my number one. I don't know if it's my necessarily my number one, but definitely a favorite. I have two Kendrick Lamar albums that I think are really good. I think Damn is really good. Album released in 2017, and then To Pimp a Butterfly was released in 2015. I think both of those projects are outstanding. Really like listening to those at all times. So those are two albums that are really, really good. Just to go back to Nothing Was the Same, that was released in 2013, I believe. So going in the way back machine for some of these. And then I also have All American Badass by Joey Badass. That's a really good album that I run all the time. That's a album from 2017, I believe. So that's another favorite for sure. And then My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy by Kanye West. That's a really good album. Another one with no skips, which is kind of the way that I looked at all these albums, where it's like, okay, which ones can I listen to that I don't skip at all? So I think that's a good five. Honorable mention, I think, really, Take Care, which is another good Drake album that I really like. Good Kid, Mad City from Kendrick Lamar, also another really good album. So just a couple of those to name a few. If you're so inclined, you can go listen to any of those albums. They're really, really good. I would recommend all of those to anybody. But I think it's a good way to wrap up this week's episode. We'll certainly be back with you folks on Guest Friday. Looking forward to that. Talking Red Sox. So we will talk to you then, and stay safe, everybody.